When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, you could buy the latte, but, you know, like, they're so expensive these days.
Yeah, they're so expensive.
You buy them every day of the week. That's money you could be spending on other things. It's just, like, awareness that I want people to have about their money. I don't really care how you spend it. I just want you to understand, like, okay, I'm enjoying this. That means I can't enjoy that. And maybe that's okay.
Hello, and welcome to Planacious Podcast, Future Rich. I'm your host, Barbara Ginty, and I'm also a CFP, and I am here with one of our favorite guests, Lindsay Sanberry. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Barbara. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
We wanted to have you back on. We did a fun mini-series last year where we interviewed women about their finances, and then I think you had just started, but now we're over a year in on your newsletter called The Purse. So if you haven't checked it out, it's a great newsletter. And I think it's really fascinating because you break down not only the financials, but also the domestic labor in the household.
Yeah. Yeah. On The Purse, I have two franchises, one called Home Economics, which looks at the financial life of a woman and her family. And then a second series called Division of Labor, where a couple with children share a peek into their day, 24 hours of what it's like raising kids.
That's really fascinating and a little scary as someone who doesn't have children when you look at the...
Yeah, it's exhausting. I often feel very tired after I've read an edited one, for sure.
Yeah, the I find both fascinating, but the one with the children scares me a little bit more just because you read some interesting things there.
Yeah, yeah. We had one yesterday with a couple who have a just turned one-year-old. And they live in Birmingham and they don't have any childcare. They call it us care. And they're doing a whole, they work two full-time jobs and have a baby at home full-time. And it is a lot. And everybody in the comments were very concerned that maybe they should get some help.
It is a lot. And then also to see like how the breakdown between the male and the female goes, I think is really interesting. And that's something that we've seen a lot more in the past year or two, especially the movie Fair Play came out to kind of talk about how sometimes the mental load falls more on the female in the relationship.
Yeah.
Even sometimes more the childcare.
Yeah. I'm a mom in Brooklyn and I end up all these events and everybody wants to talk about Fair Play. So I think that it's something, even among my friends, that there's a lot of curiosity about how people make it work. And actually the inspiration for the series was a reporter that I used to work with at Fortune and CNBC. And we were having lunch and she doesn't yet have kids, but she was talking about how she's just endlessly interested in how parents make it work. And I was like, I think there's something there. So I tried it out. Actually, I made my husband do it first to see what it was like and put our, lives under the microscope. And we did a weekend day, but the couple has a choice. They can choose to either do a weekend or a weekday.
Because it does seem like sometimes with these, even also with your finances, that you fall into these patterns. They're not always chosen, right?
Yeah.
Like you didn't say, okay, here, I'm going to sign up for all mental load of the household. It just kind of evolves and happens that way. So I think the fact that you can take the time to sit down and kind of inventory what it actually looks like can be eye-opening.
Yeah. And, with the book Fair Play, it's actually a whole process where you sit down with your partner and you divide up all the family responsibilities. My husband and I are not that organized. I don't think you would ever agree to something like that anyway. And, but you know, you find like when you have a kid, and I even think like in non-kid relationships, like people, you know, couples gravitate towards the things that they do best, you know, like I cook dinner, my husband does the dishes. We really split like, a lot of the like childcare responsibilities, like who does pick up, who does drop off. But I do a lot of the like making sure there's Band-Aids and toilet paper and, you know, those kinds of things just are like constantly on my mind. And then he tries to like relieve some of the responsibilities. Like my son has a peanut allergy, so we need new EpiPen. So I fished out the EpiPen, you know, box out of the cabinet and asked him to call the pharmacist to renew the prescription. So those kinds of things, you know, it's a real tag team effort to get it all done.
Yeah. But it's interesting to read because some people's aren't super equal when you're going through the newsletter.
No, it's funny. A couple of weeks ago, we had a couple and the husband went out of town and he wrote nothing. People in the comments were really upset that like he didn't share more. And the mom also was traveling and she like took like a 5 a.m. flight from the East Coast and landed at her home on the West Coast and like immediately started like doing laundry. And she's a small business owner. So as we were talking about earlier, it's 60 hours, you know, whenever you want to do them. So she was doing laundry and taking calls and driving her kids to softball. And she's also the coach. And meanwhile, the husband is like having dinner with my colleagues and I'm going to bed at 9 o'clock at the hotel. So it's interesting. And I don't think it's always like that for them. It just happened to be what the day was like. Yeah. And I think that that's the other thing that, you know, a lot of the feedback is often like, you know, why is this the day you chose? And I think that, you know, I'm sure you also feel like this as a small business owner, like no 2 days are ever the same. And, you know, you can read 1,000 habit forming books and, you know, productivity hacks. And the truth is like, you know, life comes at you in unexpected ways and you just kind of have to roll with it. And I think that's the most important thing that you can maybe come away with this is like, you know, we're all just trying our best and that's all we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. No, especially as a small business owner, we were talking about it earlier, but I would say 11 years into owning a business, you would think that I would know how to handle things or that it would be similar or consistent, and it's not. I think the only thing is you, and probably similar with this, is like you just learn how to handle it better, right? Mm-hmm. Your just reaction is more tempered. You learn to not let it all raise your blood pressure. Yeah. In the beginning, I feel like everything was like overwhelming. Yeah. But with the division of labor, and I agree. I think it's really fascinating as someone not having a child, but considering it of like, what would the breakdown look like? And as a small business owner, my husband joke, is you can work whatever 60 hours you do. but I will not be the primary caregiver. We've already discussed it just because of where our finances lie. So as the, as a business owner, I pay the majority of our bills. So I said I was very happy to switch and be primary caregiver should we have a child if he can replace my income. So I find it really interesting because I would say out here in Utah, you see a lot more stay-at-home dads.
Oh, that's great.
Yep. So it like does not faze my husband at all. Like he would have a group of guys that are also primary parents that are like their wives are the ones who have to travel for work and have longer hours. So I think it's really interesting because I was with girlfriends over the weekend and one couple, they're in a business together. So they have a lot of childcare help just because they're both running a business together, which is a lot. And then they have two children. And then the other girlfriend, her husband is a stay-at-home dad. And in New York, it's harder to find a network from what she said. And I think that's kind of an interesting concept because like for me, or at least for my husband, it's like not unusual for the man to be the parent, the stay-at-home parent, or the one doing more of the parenting.
Yeah. Among my group of friends, most of the women are the ones with the breadwinning jobs, and the husbands take like a whole bunch of different roles, maybe more flexible yep. jobs. One of my close friends, her husband is a stay-at-home dad. So yeah, it's just, yeah, it varies. I haven't yet had we're only six division of labors in. So yeah. There will be lots more couples featured coming up. And I am looking forward to having a stay-at-home dad and same-sex couple.
Yeah.
And I think that there's lots of different dynamics to consider and, you know, number of children you have. And I think so far it's strangely been families of three and with three kids and families with one kid. And so we also need to get a mix of children and ages, and because every age brings a different kind of set of challenges. You know, yeah. with babies, it's just keeping them alive, keeping yourself alive. And when you have teenagers or preteens, it introduces like driving to weeknight sports leagues and band practice and theater practice. So like your responsibilities change. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I can't. I am floored by watching the whole thing. Have you had a favorite so far?
You know, I feel very, like, I loved this week's with Mark and Maya. Mark writes a really fantastic newsletter on Substack called Raising Miles, where he writes letters to his son. And they're just so lovely. And then my good friend from childhood, who like I grew up with and was close to, and then we kind of drifted apart and then we reconnected. She's also a writer, Rebecca, and her husband, Warren. They have three kids and are based in DC. Was really one of my favorites. And they just so put so much time and thought and energy into writing it. We're very forthcoming about who manages the most responsibility. Rebecca is a writer and Warren is a lawyer. And so he obviously is making a lot more money, and that changes the dynamics in their relationship. And they were just so forthcoming about it. And I really admired that. It brought up so many comments too. It was interesting.
And then you'll continue. And are you looking for people to?
So I've had people reach out and express interest, but I'm doing pretty much, I'm handpicking them right now.
Okay.
Looking specifically for diversity in mind, because it's really easy to just fall into a trap of everyone kind of looking the same and having the same experiences. That said, I am looking for stay-at-home dads or same-sex couples. So if people are interested, please reach out. And just because I'm always interested to hear stories. Like I'm sitting on a lot of great ones right now, but we only do one a month. So also, there's the backlog.
There's that.
Yes. But it's a big writing commitment. And so I try to be a little thoughtful of that. It's easier with home economics because it's just one person responsible for writing it. And with this, it's two. And as I said in yesterday's newsletter, it's really hard to get the dads on board.
I was going to say, right? That seems to be the challenge.
And so I just want to make sure that both people and both the mother and the father, both everybody's on board and willing to do this, because it makes a much more compelling story.
Yeah. If you see both sides of it.
If you see both sides. Yeah.
Yeah. And you haven't had a single parent on.
No, but there's no division of labor there.
Yeah, I know. Would you do a single parent or no?
You know, I am working on a series, with another reporter right now that I'm hoping to run on The Purse this fall, which is going to be about single women and finances.
Okay.
And looking at different ways that money touches single women's lives, and the choice to have a child or raise a child, you know, get divorced and raise a child on your own, is something that I'm going to explore.
Yeah, because it's very different. All of the scenarios, one being a single person, I think, because then you're 100% responsible for saving and planning for retirement or anything that might come up in your life. And then making decision A, because we see it now more with the advancement in technology, like, do you want to have a child alone if you haven't found a partner? Because it's not always you might not always find a partner in time, right? Because of a biological clock. And then the other one, which is you were partnered and now no longer partnered. Mm-hmm. So all pose different challenges.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a topic area that I've been really interested in for a long time. And I've been trying to figure out how to cover even back to my refinery days. So I'm eager to, I've been talking to a reporter that I'm friends with about teaming up because she is a single woman and I think she could bring an interesting perspective to it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that we see a lot. One of the issues we have in our industry is that especially for older single women, they're targeted more for crimes, mm-hmm. for senior crimes. Mm-hmm. And I really think it comes down to the fact that there is no counter check, right? There is no counterbalance there. So if you are being targeted or manipulated, there mm-hmm. isn't someone else. And not to say that if you have a partner, they would not fall prey to the same tactic. Right. But I do think it helps if there's another party there who's like, wait, who are you talking to? What are they saying? Yeah. I don't agree. Versus if you're all alone or you, especially as you get older, right? You know, maybe your friends are not as nearby or your family isn't as close or they're grown up and moved away. And so there's a big issue with senior crimes, but I have found, or I have seen it's a lot more targeted to women.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which
That's
is interesting.
Really rough.
Yeah, no. Yeah. So what we say in the office is I always make sure to tell everyone, but it's like try to really drive it home for single women. If anything happens, even if you think it's not related, always call our office. We're always here to be a sounding board.
Right.
And
right.
you can always call us and run anything by us. We're never too busy. And anything that anyone is asking you is not an emergency, right? So like if, let's say I'm unavailable for the afternoon and can't call till tomorrow, nothing should have to happen in that 4 hours remaining in the business day that can't wait till tomorrow at 9 a.m. And so really try to stress that you're not bothering me, you're not bothering the office, but you should always call and check. But I think that, as you said, like being a single individual poses a whole different set of challenges at every life stage, right?
At like every life stage.
Parent, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Buying a home, deciding what jobs you do, launching a business, all kinds of things.
All kind of things. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I launched a business. Well, bought a business as a single person. And I remember being like very overwhelmed with the amount of financial responsibility I was taking on and how it's all up to me. Which is a little intimidating.
Yeah, I think that the privilege of having a partner is not discussed enough.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, I did it anyway, but I do think what would have been nice, like, you know, people who got married in their 20s to be like, okay, well, I won't take a salary for a little bit, but we can live on your income, right? There's like a little bit of a safety net there that like, basically for me, when I bought the business, which worked out that the finances were not right and I could not afford my apartment, there was no safety net there. Like I got an eviction notice and then had to thankfully found, I was like, oh, this is not ideal. It was so delayed on rent. I was like trying to, because rent, you have to pay in cash, right? So other things I could put on a credit card and you could just carry.
Right.
But rent, they wanted, you know, they didn't want a credit card, unfortunately. But I was lucky enough to find a girlfriend who agreed to rent my apartment from me.
Oh, that's a relief.
Yeah, it was, a little bit of a sales pitch on my part. I was like, this is going to be way better for you. This is going to allow you to save for a home faster. And in my head, I was like, and I won't lose my apartment or get evicted. But yeah, I do think, I agree. I think it can go both ways. It depends on your partner, right? Some people's partner contribute financially, some people's partner don't. And so it depends on the type of partner you have. But it just, I think being a single person has a different aspect to it, right? That isn't often talked about.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Taking care of your health isn't always easy, but it should at least be simple. That's why for the last 3 years, I've been drinking AG1 every day with no exceptions. It's just one scoop mixed in water once a day, every day, and it makes me feel ready to take on my day. That's because each serving of AG1 delivers my daily dose of vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, and more. It's a powerful, healthy habit that's also powerfully simple. With AG1, I know I'm getting essential brain, gut, and immune health support with vitamins, probiotics, and nutrients from Whole Foods. I like to think of it as my nutritional insurance. I know I'm covering my nutritional bases from the very start of the day. If there's one product I had to recommend to elevate your health, it's AG1, and that's why I've partnered with them for so long. So if you want to take ownership of your health, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase exclusively at drinkag1.com/futurerich. That's drinkag1.com/futurerich. Check it out.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point about couples and money. It's interesting with home economics. I've had a couple of examples of married couples who don't share their finances at all and keep everything completely separate. And I think that brings in a whole other host of challenges, right? You kind of lose the couple benefits.
Yeah, I find the home economics really interesting because I also think, at least for me personally, I got married really late. So I got married at 39. So I had built my net worth, built, mm-hmm. you know, multiple businesses, multiple properties, right? And so then yeah. It's like, well, what does this look like? Because I'm already a pretty predefined entity here.
Yeah. Yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah, because I think it's very different than if you get married young mm-hmm. and you both come in with comparable assets or mm-hmm. you're starting at the beginning.
Yeah.
Versus 20, almost 20 years into a career.
Yeah.
As a first marriage.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, for second marriages, if you come in, you usually keep everything completely separate. That's very common as a second marriage, is everything is kept separately or very divided.
Yeah. Because there's like kids involved and things like that too, mm-hmm. right?
And then the inheritance stays separate, right? Because this is my money from their parent. And then we're going to keep, it's usually not always, but usually in a second marriage, everything is kept separate.
Yeah. In the case of the recent couple that kept their finances completely separate, they started dating in college. Like they've always
just done it separate.
The husband made a lot more. My mother was so upset about it. It's funny. And my brother was too. It's like, I know I'm onto something when I hear from both my mom and my brother.
What did they say?
Well, you know, it's interesting because my mom and dad got married super young. My mom was 19 and like they had no money and, you know, they built careers together and have stayed together. They're married. It's 55 years this year, which is amazing.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So she's very much in the camp of like this is a shared, you know, marriage should be about sharing your resources. And I think my brother feels like that's sort of how we were raised. Like, mm-hmm. Your partner is your partner and you're in it together. So yeah, that was their feelings on it. I really try not to have opinions because I really, like after having like between Money Diaries and Home Economics and just like all the time in between, like I've just seen people do everything.
Yep.
And I'm sure you feel like this too. It's so complicated and there's like so many money feelings mm-hmm. that like you really can't judge how another person manages their money because it's not common sense. Common sense is not what is making people make financial decisions.
Nope.
Like they do it based on like all kinds of other things. And like, you know, we would all be really like rich. I'm not sure necessarily happy, but we'd all be rich if like common sense was the reason that we made financial decisions. But
yes, because there's a lot more emotions involved with it. Usually, and emotions don't always mean rational, logical decisions.
No. And like, it has to do with your, like, your childhood and how your parents did things and how much money you make and like who your friends are and what they're doing and like what your like socioeconomic group is into and what your ethnic background does. And so like, there's so many things that play into this that at this point I'm like, all right, if that works for you, like maybe open a high yield savings account. Like, please don't keep $50,000 in checking. Besides that, like I just have like two rules, like keep your savings in high yield savings account and invest in your company's 401k and the rest of it. I don't know, whatever works.
I agree. I think that it's important that you do what feels right and equitable, and equitable doesn't always mean equal, right? I think it's super important that both parties feel that it's fair for them. I also, my concern always is, and I just, because I see like the other side, since I work with older people a lot more, and is that you protect yourself because this concept of, well, we're not going to get divorced, to me is, well, we don't not buy life insurance, right? And you don't not get homeowners if you own a home. Statistically, your house is a lot less likely to burn down than you are to get divorced, right? Divorce is much more statistically likely to happen to you. And it only takes one party to want a divorce. You could not want a divorce. You could be willing to do anything to save the marriage. But if your partner picks up and takes an overnight bag and leaves, you are probably not going to stay married. And so my one concern always, it doesn't matter how you're splitting it, is that like you protect yourself in a worst case scenario that you're not going to experience a real personal tragedy, because it always appears to be very hard to go through, and then also a financial tragedy on the back end. We're actually hoping to have a guest on, and she wrote a book about this, but she went through, it's called The Gray Divorce When It Happens. And so she feels very strongly about this because this happened to her, and she was an attorney, and her husband, I don't know if he was an attorney or just had a business job, but anyway, she kind of put her career on the back burner to support the family. It was all shared. And then I don't believe she wanted this divorce, and this happened to her, I think at 60. And she basically needed a career at that point. Maybe it was a little earlier, but it was like not at 30 or 40 when you're peak earnings. Which is horrible, but also interesting and like a good learning lesson. And, you know, you hope it never happens, but being prepared for something never hurts, because if it doesn't happen, it doesn't, then you never use that preparation. So,
I think the comparison to life insurance is smart, although a lot of people don't have life insurance either.
So. But I mean, you get car, everyone gets insurance. So it's odd to me that you wouldn't give yourself a little bit of insurance in case the marriage doesn't work out. And that's the only thing, I think I find it really fascinating to see how couples split money. But I'm always a little weary if one person is kind of left open to a financial problem, if there should be an issue with the marriage. So, because like you said, you know, your family history pays into it. My parents have been married, I probably should know this, like 45 years or something like that. Actually, maybe closer to 50. It's a long time. And so the way they always did it is my dad's money was their money and my mom's money was hers money. I thought that was really funny because my dad was the you know, primary breadwinner, and you know, my mom had a job as well, and that was her money. Like, she didn't share that; they didn't go to anything. And then my dad's money was her money as well. So I always thought that was really, really funny. But basically, you know, it was everything my dad made was shared, and then my mom got to keep. She kept all of her stuff separate.
It's amazing. My mom always used to joke, "What's yours is mine, and what's mine is mine." So.
So that's interesting.
Not a bad idea.
Have you had a favorite on that part of the newsletter?
I mean, speaking of Gray Divorce, we had a woman in her 60s who's in pretty dire financial straits after a divorce that she went through in her 40s. Basically has no retirement savings to speak of, and is concerned that she's probably going to work forever. She was so forthcoming, and she was really lovely. And I talked to everybody before we run them. And so that was like, I just had such a lovely conversation with her, and she really wanted, there had been some like blowback in the comments about from an earlier one that I was featuring people who made too much money. And, you know, I made the argument that oftentimes the people who submit their injuries are in good financial situations.
We've gotten that feedback as well.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, then sometimes when people come on and have that comment, they're not in a bad financial position either. So sometimes they think they are when they they're listening to the podcast and they presume that they're worse off, and they're not, just because I think the interesting thing is, just because you make a lot of money does not automatically, in my opinion, put you in a good financial position.
No.
So you don't have to make that much. It all comes down to kind of what your expenses are versus what you're making. So we feature someone who makes 300, but their expenses are exactly matching their take home pay.
Yeah.
And your income is 75 and your expenses are only 50% of your take home pay. Well, then you're actually in a better position.
Right. Right. And in the case of this woman, she was very good at budgeting and working with what she had, but she did not have significant retirement
savings.
That's
sometimes what you see with divorces.
Yeah. She did everything she could to keep her house for her kids. And I understood why she did that. But, you know, it goes back to like rational financial decisions. Was it a good one? I'm not sure. And she ended up liquidating her 401k at that time in order to keep them afloat. You understand why people make those decisions for sure. And then this past weekend, we ran one with a couple that I really liked based out of Kansas City. And they sort of loosely follow the FIRE movement, and they've saved a lot of money. And the husband was laid off from his job in March and is able to like take some time off because they are in such a good state financially. And I just really enjoyed, I really liked the woman who shared her story. Like I talked to her, like I said, I talked to everybody on the phone and we had just had a lovely conversation. And they make really good salary. Like between the two of them, when her husband was working, they were making close to $300,000 a year, which is a lot of money. But they had lived in the same house since 2009, and they actually just paid it off completely this week. And they were driving a 20-year-old car. And, the things that they were very clear on what they were spending, what they wanted to spend their money on. And they weren't just spending money to spend money. And I was joking to somebody recently about like the whole thing with lattes, right? Like it always drives me crazy.
I know, you hate that analogy.
Like people are always like, just buy the latte. And it's like, well, yeah, you could buy the latte, but you know, like they're so expensive these days.
Yeah, they're so expensive.
You buy them every day of the week. That's money you could be spending on other things. And it's like, you know, like you trade 5 days a week for latte to like go out to the movies in New York, which is like so stupidly expensive too. Or like, you know, it's just like awareness that I want people to have about their money. I don't really care how you spend it. I just want you to understand like, okay, I'm enjoying this. That means I can't enjoy that. And maybe that's okay.
Yeah. It's intentionality, I think. Right. And so like,
yes,
if you decide that, you know, you hate your job and getting the latte is the only thing that gets you there. And that's
right.
Preset choice that you're going to do this job you don't like for 2 more years, but you're going to get yourself a latte every day to go. And that's a decision that you are actively making and intentional about the spend. It's totally fine. I think the issue, and I see this when I read the submissions or in the newsletter and what we hear on the show, is when you don't know where your money is going, that's the problem.
Yeah.
Like if you're like, I'm making money, but I'm treading water, that's really the issue, the treading water part,
the
right?
Treading water. Yeah.
You want to make sure that you're moving forward in the direction that you want to go, and everyone's direction will be different. But if you're just treading water, that's really the problem. And you might be treading water because of a latte, or because of Ubering everywhere, or getting nails done, or eating the $15 salad every day for lunch plus the latte.
Yeah.
And it's really just about, I think, the intentionality of your money. And is it helping you go somewhere, or are you just stagnant?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a really good question. And you know, it's also clothes and furniture and cars. And, you know, I was talking to the woman from Kansas City, and we bought a car during the pandemic, and I love my car, but we bought like the most basic Subaru that we could get. Like I was like, no seat warmers, no, what are they called in the roof? No,
Sunroof.
Yes, no sunroofs. I was like, because like you could actually see the map, and like it was like, I don't want to spend an extra $100 a month on this. Like, I just, yeah, I don't want it enough. And like every once in a while, I'm like, I'll be in the car in the wintertime and it'll be cold, and I'll be like, did I need the butt warmers? And I'll be like, no, I did not. I did not. I did not. It's okay. I'm happy with that extra $100 in my pocket.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that intentionality is really important. I also think the other thing that I think has come up more recently for me, I've heard in social groups, is like, what is enough too?
Yeah. Yeah.
And we interviewed, and you know, Manisha Thakur, mm-hmm, and so her recent book on that, I think is really fascinating, because especially now with social media, it appears like everyone has unlimited resources, can spend, yeah, whatever they want, do whatever they want, and not really have to work. It just looks, mm-hmm, like everyone's always out there having a great time, spending, mm-hmm, lots of money. And so I think that's the other aspect, like the flip side of intentionality about your money, but then also like, what is enough? Like, at what point, like, do you have enough? Or is, because I think there's a lot of, in our culture, in, you know, in the United States, like where you're looking to get a nicer car, right? Like upgrade the car, upgrade, right, the house, upgrade the vacation, right, on a regular basis. And like, yes, I just wonder how much more joy that brings, mm-hmm, people.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And like the constant striving. And I'm glad that we're talking about it more. I think about it all the time. I haven't figured out what my enough is.
I haven't. This is what I talked about this over the weekend with girlfriends. And I was like, I think this is enough. I have a number in my head where I think is enough. Mm-hmm. And I said it, and it was another financial advisor. And he was like, well, that's definitely not enough. And I was like, really? Because I'm pretty sure it sounds like perfect amount for me. Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like plenty. But once again, it comes down to budget. So he lives a very different lifestyle than me.
Right, mm-hmm, right. Right. Yes. I had recently done some like math to figure out, you know, because Ken and I are big savers and we've always been big, mm-hmm, savers, and it's allowed, we have a low cost of living. It's allowed me to, yep, take this year to start the purse. And I did some math sort of thinking about our retirement savings. And I was like, oh, if we save this much a year, we can get to that number at 65. And that number feels really good. Mm-hmm. And then like the rest is just like gravy at this point. So like we should just, yep, relax a little, but it's hard to relax.
Yeah, it's really hard to. I feel the same way. I feel like my number for retirement should be fine. Yep. And I could probably tone it down a little, but it is hard to. I also think owning a business is hard too, because I feel like, you know, no one's setting my goals, so I'm setting them. So they come in a little higher than I think if I had a boss, the numbers would be a little more realistic, I would think. But I think it's really interesting, yeah, what is enough. And we did a podcast, I forget what episode number it was, but I was really impressed with them. They were really good savers. And mm-hmm, there was two. And this woman, I was like, yeah, I think you, based on what you're telling me, unless you change your lifestyle, you have enough. If, yeah, this is what you want to do, like you have enough resources to do this. And she was like, oh, okay, I wasn't sure. And I was like, it all comes down to like what you're willing to spend. And then also just not getting caught up in that lifestyle inflation, or, yeah, getting caught up with the Joneses, right? Like my friend is doing this, so I want to do that too.
Yeah. I think the thing that's top of mind for me right now with a kid is that like eventually we will have to pay for college. And, mm-hmm, I want to make sure we have enough for that.
Yeah. I'll be curious to see what happens with college. Cause obviously the inflation on college from like the 70s through now has been astronomical.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to see what happens with the pricing, because,
yeah,
the pricing has gotten so, so high that it feels completely unaffordable for most Americans to pay for college, depending on where you go.
Yeah. I do think that left out of that conversation is like ticket price and then real price, because most people real are not price, paying, right, what the ticket price is.
Right. Yeah. With scholarships, or if you go, yeah, in state.
Yeah. And even private schools often have like a sliding scale of tuition.
It would be great if it went back to the days where you could work and pay for it yourself, like where you just got a job and then you could like go to class and pay your tuition all at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom always talks about the University of Texas being $25, like a class a semester, you know, when she was, yep, there. It's like, oh my God, $100 a semester. Can you imagine?
Yeah, no, I can't even imagine. Even if it was like $1,000 a semester, like even if you inflated that. So it'd be really interesting. So Lindsay, you have something exciting coming up.
Oh yeah. I'm launching a website that Hit the Purse is expanding. So it won't, but that doesn't mean more home economics and more divisions of labor, but hopefully more financial advice and more storytelling in general.
Amazing. So we'll keep an eye out for that. And where is the best way for everyone to find you?
You can find me at The Purse is on Substack, so it's just thepurse.substack.com. That's the best place to find me.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on. It was great catching up.
It's so great to catch up. I always love to see you, Barbara.
And for all of our lovely listeners, you can follow us on Instagram and also TikTok and YouTube. Time for our disclaimer. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results. Make sure that you consult with your own legal, tax, and/or financial advisor before making any decisions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.